welcome to the Simon and Joe Film Show, a weekly podcast from London.
I'm Simon.
I'm Joe.
And this week we're going to be talking about True Grit, the new Coen Brothers film, which we've managed to watch.
Inside Job, a documentary from Charles Ferguson.
And also Animal Kingdom, which is an Australian film, which is being released next week. These were preview screenings at the Clapham Picture House.
Lucky us. We're outside the South Bank Centre. That's where we're going to record this week. We've also got news. Simon, what's your most interesting bit of news? Film news, obviously, from this week. Obviously, the Egyptian news is great news. That's, you know, that's current affairs.
It's not
what we cover this week.
No.
What's the film news?
I'm thinking Lindsay Lohan. What we're going to discuss about Lindsay Lohan is super and criminal in equal measure.
Equal measure. She is both of those things and more. Michael Moore, what is he to you?
Fat. I'm just saying. I mean, okay. He's a big guy.
He's not a big guy.
Let's be honest.
And now he's suing the Weinsteins and potentially making a fictional film. There's so much going on.
So much. You know, I got MovieScope magazine this week. Really good magazine. Really good. I've never got it before. So it's a filmmaker magazine for filmmakers. So, you know, I'm going to see how it goes.
Yeah,
First time.
All right, we'll see
how it goes.
And then, you know, we'll catch up on that later on, I guess.
I'd like to think so. Happy days. Okay, so we're in the South Bank Centre.
Yeah, nice. Members area, Simon. Well done.
You got us in here.
You passed the security test.
Indeed.
And we're essentially airside.
And we're going to be discussing True Grit, the new Coen Brothers film.
Yes.
So.
Nominated for Oscars.
Indeed.
Definitely. Jeff Bridges is in there as...
as Rooster Coburn.
Yep. Hayley Stenfield is in there as...
Matty Ross.
Good. Okay, we're getting there. And Matt Damon is...
Le Beef.
Nice, okay. So those are the main cast. Josh Brolin's in there as well as Tom Chaney.
Yes.
The bad guy.
And it's based upon an original book, in fact.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that there was a film which was very famous at 69, I think it was, with John Wayne. And more importantly, John Wayne won Best Actor for his role
as Rooster Cogburn.
Yeah, in True Grit. So it's quite an important film in the Western genre. So to have it remade was quite a big step for the Coen Brothers.
40 years later, they revisit it. But I haven't seen the original film. But I think what they're saying is this is more true to the book. That the John Wayne film is more light, is more inspiring, is more hopeful.
Yes.
Than this one, which, you know, I think gives you an idea of what the film is going to be like. You know, going into it, you know that it's going to be a more difficult watch. The Coen Brothers, they mix their depressing films with their comedies. So, for example, they followed No Country for Old Men with Burn After Reading.
Yeah.
Although then they did A Serious Man, which I guess was stuck somewhere between the two.
Yes.
But, I mean, they are now Oscar-nominated directors, and they're always... their films are an event, I
think. Always.
Say.
Definitely. No, I think so, definitely. And I think now's the best time for a clip.
Can we depart this afternoon?
We? You are not going. That is no part of it.
You have misjudged me if you think I'm silly enough to give you $50 and watch you simply write off.
I'm a bonded U.S. Marshal.
That weighs but little with me. I will see the thing done.
I've been the ducks. Can't go after Ned Pepper and band of hard men look after a baby at the same time.
I am not a baby.
Won't be stopping at boarding houses where there's warm beds and hot grub on the table. I'll be traveling fast, eating light. A little sleeping is done to take place on the ground.
Well, I have slept out at night before. Papa took me a little Frank Coon hunting last summer on the Petit Jean. We were in the woods all night. We sat around a big fire and yarn all told ghost stories. We had a good time.
Coon hunting? This ain't no coon hunt.
Okay, Simon, so give us an idea of the story. We know the characters, and we know it's been made before, we know it's based on a book. What basically happens?
Well,
sum it up.
We've got Maddie Ross, little girl, 14-year-old girl, very, very, very savvy.
Precocious.
Precocious, nice. And she comes into town, I think, is it Fort Smith? She comes into on train to find someone to avenge her father's death, because her father was killed by Tom Chaney.
Yeah,
and it was completely like horror. It was had no purpose. Tom Chaney was just kind of killed him for a little bit of money, nothing much, and she is going to avenge his death, but obviously she needs help. And so she comes to the town to kind of deal with his affairs, deal with his coffin, deal with, you know, how he's going to, you know, be passed on, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But at the same time, she wants to find someone to hunt down Chaney and kill him.
So we're talking about, you know, the Wild West, essentially, here, aren't we? And she has to hire a man who's, you know, a bounty hunter by any other word, to, because the law isn't interested. It's too much. He's gone in. Tom Chaney, the man who killed her father, who's played by Josh Brolin, has gone into Indian territory. No one will follow him there. The law won't follow him there, because they've got too much else to deal with, I think, is essentially the point. You know, this is the growth of America. So she has to hire someone, you know, the start of capitalism, I guess you would say. She has to hire someone to do her dirty work for her.
Yeah.
And so she finds Rooster, who is played by Jeff Bridges, who is this gnarly, growly, beardy dude. And also, of course, is where LaBeouf comes on the scene. He's been tracking Tom Chaney for months now. He's also some kind of lawman, but he's on the trail of Chaney. So they all of them ride into Indian territory, and that's when the real fun begins.
Now, I went into this, and I was expecting. I mean, I think it's fair to say that for a long time now, the Coen brothers have been toying with Western.
Certainly with No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, situations, yeah. No Country for Old Men, for one. I mean, a lot of their films are set in the Deep South. You know what I mean? You've got a lot of these different characters. And you, in some cases, like No Country for Old Men could be set in, you know, the 1800s. But it's not. But, it, you know, it could easily be. So, to some extent, we've been waiting a long time for the Coen brothers to really do a true Western. And, indeed, they do that with True Grit. I really liked it. I thought it was really good. But I think I do have reservations.
Okay, what about you? Give us your reservations first, and then tell us the good stuff.
Well, I think for me, I think as it was, it just seemed very kind of by the book, but very.
It was very easy. It was, you know, easy to get into. There wasn't too much complexity about it. I didn't find it very simple. Focus on very few characters, and a very simple tale of good versus evil with some slight. Some slight flaws in each character, but essentially it was good versus evil, and I think you always had a sense of the way it was roughly going to play out, and for me that's how it played out.
I agree, and I think what's really good about it though is that it does have, it seems like they're trying out this Western stuff with a story which is safe, but a story which isn't so profound. I mean, if you think about A Serious Man had these profound kind of aspects to it, a really deeper level where you could go away from the film and really think, wow, that's really personal. You know, it really makes you think. Even though Country for Old Men had some incredible situations in it which were interesting, but at the same time, you know, visually the story, you didn't know what was going to happen, you didn't know where it was going to go, perhaps, because Javier Bardem's Shigur was so fearful, you were like, what's going to happen? And Malkovich comes on, all that kind of stuff. So you don't know what's going to happen, whereas this, you kind of know what's going to happen. It's not really that profound, but at the same time, it is. In its delivery, in how it looks, in the performances, it is incredible. I mean, it is really, really good.
I've got to say, the thing I most enjoyed about it, and I didn't enjoy it that much, was actually the dark humour. It was very much, the Coen brothers have a very distinct sense of humour, and even in a film as serious as this, and dealing with issues as serious as this, they still found that humour. Jeff Bridges, phenomenal, Oscar nominated, obviously, for Best Actor. He found, in his growliness, in his beardiness, you found humour in that, and that for me was entertaining. The rest of it, I found pretty boring, if I'm honest.
Oh, wow.
It was by the book, you know, it was gritty, and Hayley Stansfield was excellent as the young Maddie Ross, you know, kind of behaving. I mean, you know, this is kind of, like I said before, the birth of a certain type of America, and she is almost, not the birth of feminism, I don't want to say, but she is representing a different type of woman, which is why she's so different from what men are expecting, and there's humour in that, obviously, which is very well mined. But ultimately, you know, it just played out as I expected, and I didn't really, I mean, she learned something, we all learned something, but I didn't feel as compelled as I have in the past by the Coen brothers, and I didn't feel like when Josh Brolin came in, who was the bad guy, only in maybe the last 20 minutes, I didn't feel fearful of him. They built up a certain image of him, certainly very different from the Javier Bardem, who's in the film the whole time and constantly stalking
in the country,
everybody. Yeah. I didn't feel like Josh Brolin when we met him.
Was it fearsome?
No.
No, I think
I was, frankly, you know,
Underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed, that's the word.
And I think it's funny as well, because I think there's a side of it which might be, that might be the point, but I think at the same time it was a bit unsatisfying. In fact, Ned, who is played incredibly, an incredible performance by Barry Pepper, I didn't even recognise it was him, but then you mentioned it to me on the way, and I was thinking, was it? And I thought, no, it could have been him.
You mean Ned, the leader of the gang who is essentially employing Tom Chaney as they're chasing him, so a bad guy.
Yeah.
He is. I mean, I wasn't that impressed by Barry Pepper. He did it by the numbers.
In terms of what you were saying about Chaney being so fearful, I thought this is an example of somebody who was incredibly fearful. I mean, he did seem as fearsome as his reputation seemed to show, and I thought that was really great.
I mean, you barely saw him. He was barely there for, you know, any time. I didn't feel
all
any...
All the more important for the performance to be so fearsome.
You know, Jeff Bridges was great, Matt Damon was great, Hayley Steinfeld were great, you know, as the good guys with some flaws, with some imperfections, but I just felt when they encountered the bad guys, it was essentially, all right, okay, so this is how it's going to be, and that, for me, was... You know, a disappointing last third of the film, I think.
Okay, well, I think we've kind of summarised it to some extent. I want to share with you an analogy.
Do it.
This is my thought on it. So the people who've watched it will probably get a bit of this. Now, I reckon there is...
Will they get it, though?
Well, I don't know. See, okay, I think there is an analogy here, or an allegory, about America's actions post 9/11.
Interesting.
Now, and how the choice of what they did... and how to avenge, effectively, the tragedy that was 9/11, and how it played out, is kind of shown here, and how that, to some extent, those actions by George Bush at the time has permanently scarred, without giving away, obviously, True Grit, but to some extent permanently scarred, America, and who America is. Now, it's worth pointing out that Westerns are often rooted in something to do with America and America's history and where it's from. And obviously, and the Coens rarely, I mean, I'm there saying that this one did just play out, and I think on the surface it is just a basic story, but it potentially has this deeper level. I mean, there are situations in it where I think to myself, Rooster Cogburn, he is a character who she relies on to avenge this death. And at the same time, he's somebody who is powerful. He's somebody who has got a lot of weaponry, and he's skillful with his weapons, and he can destroy it. He's ruthless.
But he's flawed as well.
He's flawed.
Pretty badly flawed.
He's definitely flawed.
He's a drunkard.
And he's ruthless.
And he's only got one eye.
And so I think, to some extent, maybe he represents George Bush's attitude following the tragedy.
But then I think, to be honest, the skills that he show are above and beyond the skills that George W. Bush's administration showed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I think that and that allegory falls apart just on that most basic level, to be honest with you.
Oh, well, I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay.
And then I think Matt Damon, for a while, here we
Brilliant.
Go. For a while, I was thinking...
Was he the French? Because he is Le Bouff.
Well, you say that, but I actually was thinking for a while that maybe he represented, like, I don't know my politics that well, but maybe Clinton's era. But I'm going to take that away. I think, in fact, he represented... possibly Tony Blair, had to say it, and the involvement
with that moustache
and the involvement he had in the situation, and how he was almost kind of pulled into this kind of
and then mocked
and then wasn't really a part of it, and then at the same time he was a character who had been on this for a long time and tried to do it and failed. You know what I mean? And obviously we know that people have been involved in the kind of the Middle East kind of conflict for a long time, and it really kind of came out obviously following 9/11.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on your political
knowledge
here. Tom Chaney, would he be Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden?
I don't know.
I think possibly.
I think we've got Ned, who is the bigger fear, and Chaney, who is just like representative of...
An idiot.
A terrorist, a stupid idiot, doesn't really matter. Nameless terrorist, whoever it is. Just somebody who created the... you know, problem in the first place, but the fact of the matter is there are bigger demons at hand, like Ned, like this isn't the only group of people who are bad. But that's my thought on it, anyway.
Far be it from me to fan the ridiculous flames, but in this tortured allegory, who's Matty Ross? Who is she?
I think she represents the American people and how they wanted something to be done following 9/11. Of course they did. Why not? And therefore they wanted something to be done. And unfortunately, for me, and this might be my political stance, obviously, is that I don't, you know, they turned, George Bush was the person who dealt with it.
So did the American people go, I mean, because Mattie Ross goes on the campaign, she goes into Indian Territory, did the American people, the as a whole, go into...
Well, obviously, I'm not, it's a generalisation.
It is a massive generalisation.
Exactly, it is a massive generalisation, but I just kind of think, potentially, Mattie Ross, she wanted to avenge it, this is how they went, and I think at first there was a purpose to it, and obviously... But it went wrong. I mean, like, you know, Rooster...
It definitely went wrong, Rooster, although there was some level of success.
Yeah, exactly.
And on both sides of your allegory, in the film and in real life.
Exactly. And that, there's, you know, and I think the end is also quite... I don't want to give it away, but
no,
the end is also something which feeds into that. And I think that's an interesting... Ooh, pun there, perhaps, as well. I don't know.
What? No, I didn't see it. Okay, well, enough of your punning. is it a thumbs up from you?
I think it is a thumbs up. It's great, and I just want the Coens to do more Westerns. I feel like this is their first foray into Western territory, into true Western territory. I want them to do something more epic, more grand, more characters, more story, much more profound.
I have to say, one of the things was, you know, this was relatively short. It did keep on an even keel. There wasn't too much overblown, although, you know, the planes were certainly sweeping. If it had been more overblown, it would have annoyed me even more. I certainly don't give it a thumbs up, but I do say see it, because it is a good film, and the Coen brothers are always, you know, trying new things, and I think they've succeeded in some things here. Jeff Bridges is a compelling actor to watch in any part he plays. You know,
definitely.
When you compare this to The Big Lebowski, to both the Tron films, to anything that he's made, you know, there's always, he's bringing something unique to the table. Matt Damon is good fun, and something a bit different. You know, again, the humour comes from him, and Hayley Stenfield is excellent.
Yes, definitely.
So in that sense, it's worth watching. But don't expect too much, because ultimately it's kind of flat, particularly in the final act. I felt flat.
Okay, news coming up.
Okay, so that was True Grit, and now we're into the news for this week, Simon. Firstly, your favourite documentary filmmaker of all time, Michael Moore.
Oh, well.
What's he saying?
He's apparently making a fictional film.
Oh, okay.
So,
following up Canadian Bacon, which he made in 1995.
Bowling for Columbine was equally fiction, and
You right-wing demagogue. You are appalling to me. Are you excited about it? Would you see a fiction film by him? You saw Capitalism, A Love Story.
He's only done one so far, so he does have...
Didn't do very well.
Yeah, didn't do very well. But I mean, I think to myself, actually, if he can edit a film as well as he can in those documentaries to convince us of, you know, things which are true, but then make the truth even more annoying... Or not annoying, but do you know what I mean? Like,
I fundamentally disagree with you. We've had arguments about this.
I agree with your point, Michael Moore, but why do you have to lie to make the point? That type of thing. I kind of think maybe he can edit a really good film together. Maybe that's where his skill lies.
Okay. Well, interestingly, not only is he talking about a fictional film, he's also talking about suing the Weinsteins. He's obviously fallen out with Bob and Harvey over Fahrenheit 9/11, which I think is 6 or 7 years old now. And he says he's owed at least $2.7 million. Which, as you say, would put his standing as like a man of the people in doubt, because he's whinging about money here. And I think essentially they're saying he made $20 million from the Fahrenheit 9/11. So, you know, that's what the Weinstein's defence is. You know, I don't know, how does a court case make you feel?
I just kind of think to myself, will he make a documentary about this? Will he make a documentary like, you know what I mean, suing the Weinstein brothers and Hollywood's a load of crap, and then see what happens?
And then make money, and, you know, and that's fine. I mean, the point is, he's friends with the Weinsteins. Obviously, together, they have released a good many films, and their left-wing sensibilities are reasonably in ties, although Michael Moore is considerably more left-wing than the Weinsteins. They're both still, you know, they have reason to not like George W. Bush.
Yeah, yeah.
But now here he is, he's fallen out with them, so...
I've fallen out with him. I fell out with him a long time ago.
Too long ago. Someone else you're going to fall out with is probably Frankie Muniz. What's he going to do?
Right, well, okay. This is a really interesting story. They are remaking The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Alfred Hitchcock made it twice. It was that good.
Exactly. He made it in 1934 with Peter Lorre, and then he made it again with James Stewart and Doris Day in 1956.
Wow.
And they're apparently going to remake it. Get this. They're going to be making it with kids.
Good.
So it's going to be called The Kid Who Knew Too Much.
Well, of course, it has precedent, because we know in 2007, Shia LaBeouf made Disturbia, which was essentially Rear Window, but for a younger generation.
Yes.
So, you know, the Paramount did that, and you know, now we have.
They claimed at first it wasn't, and then it turned out that they were sued, and then it was proven in court that it actually was a rip-off of Rear Window. So the question is, what Alfred Hitchcock films could be made for kids?
I don't know, Simon. Give us some suggestions.
Okay, I'm thinking Psycho.
With children.
With children, so, you know, little kids go into a little holiday camp, and crazy old man who stuffs birds kills them.
Well, wouldn't he be a kid as well? Wouldn't Norman Bates be like a 12-year-old?
He could be.
Did you ever go to that kind of camp?
But no, never. Never in my life. Another one could be Rope.
Yeah.
Okay. So some school friends all in a little house, and it never cuts away, and they kill the person. That's,
yikes.
I don't know. Can we do this? I mean, can we have this much murder for children?
No, I don't think we should. I think, I don't know if you know, the Bill Murray vehicle, The Man Who Knew Too Little, which was kind of the reversey of The Man Who Knew Too Much, and I found very funny. Hopefully they'll do that. They'll do some reversey remakes.
Okay.
Speaking of remakes, we're talking about a reimagining now.
Oh, yes.
Superman, we've spoken about it so much in recent weeks, but I think it's come back on our radar, very relevant after the casting of Henry Cavill. We're talking about the female lead, who may be Lois Lane, who may not be. Lindsay Lohan is up for it. She's got the right initials to be Lois Lane or Lana Lang.
Yeah.
Is she going to get it?
Well, probably not, because she's actually going to go to prison.
Yeah. She has also, as well as being linked to Superman, she has stolen a $2,500 necklace, and she's going to get charged with grand theft. I think the jewellery store are now trying to back out. I don't know if the publicity is bad for them, but she's back in court, and I don't think she's worked for about 12 years. So
she's doing a Winona.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
But then Winona came back. I don't think there's any coming back for Lindsay Lohan. She is going to prison. Well, how would that make you feel?
I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe she wants to go back to prison. Maybe she liked it. Maybe she's just like, oh, something to go back to prison.
It's publicity, isn't it? And it keeps her on that bandwagon. What's interesting to me is to debate via her multiple court appearances.
Yeah.
Which one was she wearing the hottest outfit in? Because that seems to be the only point of interest really here. To which court appearance did she look the best?
Well, I wouldn't know off the top of my head, but her recent one with the white...
Very short miniskirt.
White dress.
She's working
virginal. White, pure.
She's working her sex appeal.
She's not pure.
It's not going to work.
No.
It's not going to work. Something else is probably not going to work.
Whoa, no, don't say it's not going to work. I think it might.
Coens. We've already talked about them.
Okay, so we've already talked about their True Grit, but apparently...
Which is their Western.
They're weighing up doing a full-on horror. And I think, having mentioned No Country for Old Men, having mentioned maybe the more thriller aspect of things like Blood Simple, you know, it's definitely something they could do, and they could do well. The quote is that they're working on a couple of scripts, and then when the interviewer asked about whether they're going to do a full-on horror, they said, "Funny you should ask. Yes, we're working on a couple of scripts now, one of which would be fair to be called a full-on horror movie." Apparently mentioning that Frances McDormand is the monster.
Is that your Joel or your Ethan impression?
I don't know, that's my...
Okay, that's your Coen impression,
yeah.
as an entity.
Exactly.
Well done, okay. I'm not convinced, I think they're making a joke. One of them is married to Frances McDormand.
I think the Frances McDormand...
Are they implying that she's a horrible creature?
I think
a bit rude.
But then they could do a kind of Misery type thing, and Frances McDormand, I can imagine her doing this perfect kind of like creepy, like obsessive woman thing going on.
Yeah,
that would be really great.
That would be great.
You think about her in Burn After Reading when she's like that.
I haven't seen it.
She looks like she's lost her marbles a little bit there. Amp that up a tad, throw Shigur in, boom, done. Horror movie.
Yeah.
Easy.
Tick the box. Someone else who's ticking so many boxes, it actually hurts. James Franco. You've still got your James Franco bracelet on.
What would James Franco do?
And in this instance, it looks like he's going to sign up with Sam Raimi again to make Oz the Great and Powerful, the prequel to The Wizard of Oz.
Now, this project was actually abandoned by Robert Downey Jr.
Rejected by Johnny Depp.
So it's kind of like, will Franco be able to really give it that gravitas? I mean,
will he be able to give it his all? I don't think he's got the time in his schedule. I think between classes and rehearsals for his West End play and writing his poetry, I don't know if he has the time. And, of course, promoting the massive films that he's in, hosting the Oscars, potentially winning an Oscar. I don't know if he has the time.
I think
you say he's definitely not.
He's not going to win.
Okay, quickly now, where is he in the list of five? Is he bottom of the list of five?
No.
We've got Bridges for Eisenberg, Franco, and...
Somebody else. God,
who's the fifth? Who's not? Definitely not. He's fourth then. He's fourth. Okay. Brilliant. Talking of ranking stuff, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl movie spots. And we obviously haven't talked about trailers for a long time, but lovely Super Bowl watched by over 100 million people.
In America. Not so much in
England. Well, I think worldwide. It's a big
wasn't
deal.
Wasn't such a big deal over here. I saw Kai go on about Green Bay. Lots. Kai from the list.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, are you going to slag American football off now?
Is no, it honestly, it's just not my bag.
It's not your
it's
bag.
It's just not my bag.
Any sport your bag?
No.
Okay, well, that's not important. Yeah, okay. That's not important right now. The point is, you know, to get advertising in the Super Bowl costs a lot of money. So studios make 30-second clips, trailers, and they really have to pack everything in. So we've got, you know, 8 to 10. You know, the classics are in there. Transformers, Captain America, Cowboys and Aliens, even Super 8, this new Spielberg, Abrahams kind of
combo,
which we don't know very much about.
No.
Drive Angry's in there, we know a lot about that. The Adjustment Bureau is kind of, and Limitless are kind of more arty films that have somehow sneaked in there.
Yeah.
A couple of animated, we got Rio, we got Rango. You know, Simon, you've watched them now. Which of them is most compelling to you? Because they've got to fit, you know, get you intrigued in 30 seconds, except for the Pirates of the Caribbean 4 one, which is a minute long, so that's obviously the most expensive.
Well, funnily enough, that could have been 30 seconds. What a waste of money.
I mean,
come on, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Slagging off Rob Marshall.
No, but it's got, like, its audience. Come on. Anyway, no.
Yeah, but it lost its audience in the second and third one. It needs to get them back. It needs to convince them that this isn't going to be the end of the world.
Well, we'll see. I thought that my favourite one was Super 8.
Oh, okay.
I thought to myself, it's like, it looks like it's Spielberg back on form. It looks like, you know, almost the police cars from Sugarland Express and E.T. and stuff looked like they were there. The kind of dark, like, shadows and stuff. All those punching through reminded me a little bit of Jurassic Park, Close Encounters with the Aliens. I'm looking forward to that. Looks like it might be J.J. Abrams, you know, being the new Spielberg, perhaps. Opposed to Shyamalan, who failed in becoming the new Spielberg,
and is
according
now
to time.
On the way down.
Maybe.
Definitely on the way down.
Maybe.
I have to say, and it's a bit of an embarrassing confession, I was really intrigued by the Transformers one, to be honest.
Oh, no.
I'm not a Michael Bay fan, but what he's done there, the stuff that's in there, is completely insane. It's like, you know, he got insulted. I mean, obviously, he's become now a byword for an idiot in the industry.
You turn around and you'll say, don't be such a Michael Bay.
Exactly. He's even worse than Brett Ratner. I mean, you know, he's taken that mantle. So he's obviously said, screw you, I'm going to take $250 million and I'm going to go completely insane. He's actually got Frances McDormand in the cast.
Yeah, having
I think,
will she play a monster?
She could be one of the Transformers.
Possibly.
I'm hoping. But it does look completely insane. Of course, the worst one is Just Go With It, where essentially you just play a clip of a woman walking out of the water. She looks great.
And she had very big breaths.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
that's the truth.
That's the selling point.
And then
they
rewind.
Make no bones about that.
Within 30 seconds, they rewind the clip and show the same thing again, and then say, to lie to your partner and claim it's a rom-com.
Okay.
And it has got Jennifer Aniston in it. So I've got a feeling it is more rom-com than it is, you know, porn.
Okay,
is what
well,
it's
we'll
trying
see.
To pretend it is.
Nicole Kidman, bizarrely, is in it as well. It's actually out this week, so they've, you know, they've basically targeted their marketing to this weekend. I'm not going to see it. You
no.
going to see it?
No.
Not
at all.
Okay.
As if.
Okay. Well, there we go. That was the Super Bowl, and that was the news this week.
So that was some cracking news.
Some brilliant stuff in there, Simon.
Really,
I'm really enjoying the Lindsay Lohan updates we have, as well as the James Franco ones. Loving that. Let's go in the club, shall we? See who's in there this week. Maybe Lindsay and James will be in there. That's my dream.
Let's see what happens. Okay, we're in. Oh my God, my sister's here. This is embarrassing. I didn't see that coming. Pauline, my sister, she's our Facebooker of the week. She was the only person to respond to my "What's your favourite James Bond film?" question.
Last week we did a debate between Indy and James Bond, who's the best, and we got 19 responses.
Everybody got in.
Everybody was in on that. No, but it seems like nobody cares about James Bond. It seems like Indiana probably won because your sister cared enough to say GoldenEye was number one.
It is bloody good.
It is bloody good.
Your favourite James Bond?
It's difficult to make a decision on the hoof like that. There are probably two or three that would be there that
Which
would
are?
Be equal. Diamonds Are Forever, GoldenEye. And
I thought you were going to say Die Another Day, and that would have been the end of the podcast right then.
Right there.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I should. No, I'm not gonna say it. I don't know. Let's say. I don't know. I can't think what the hell
okay.
would be. And you put me under pressure. What's yours?
Well, I said, was it GoldenEye, Casino Royale, and From Rush with Love?
Okay, I'd probably put From Rush with Love up there, potentially.
Okay.
Anyway.
Who else? Emma Farley is in here. All right, and she's our Twitterer of the week, and her Twitter is MsLF, so obviously All these links are on our website page, so you can link to her if you want. Follow her, indeed.
Yeah.
And why are we following her?
I think she very much enjoyed the King's Speech, doesn't everybody? Except yes. for Joe, and she told me to get on it.
She said, "Oi, Joe, get on it." Yeah. And then she said that she will actually willingly watch Tron Legacy if you watch King's Speech.
Does that mean I have to have sex with the King's Speech? Is that what the suggestion is?
What, to get on it?
Yeah.
Get
isn't
on
that
Colin
what the young people are doing. Saying these days?
I think you should.
I'm not going to have sex with Colin Hurt, and I'm not going to watch King's Speech.
Been there, so done that for me.
Don't worry, Emma, sorry, you don't have to watch Tron Legacy, because this exchange of ideas is not going to happen.
I don't know what will make you do it.
Sorry, Emma, I can't come and talk to you because we're just going to fundamentally argue, so I'll leave you over in the corner of the club chatting to the other members.
I'll go talk to her.
Okay, you go and talk to her. Emma, I'll talk to the guy who writes Invasion of the B-Movies.
Now, this is Jason Solo. Now, he mentioned that his fiancé, now this is funny, we should all go to the Justin Bieber movie. Yeah?
Yeah.
And we should actually go in there and be really loud and be really obnoxious and act like teenagers, you know, when they destroy our films.
That's
a good idea.
I've got two fundamental problems with it. Firstly, that means me giving money to Justin Bieber, which I can't do that.
Yeah.
And secondly, they'll probably enjoy it. They'll probably sing along and get involved in being loud and obnoxious, and I don't want to be part of that mob mentality. I won't do it.
The worry is as well is that it might go down there. It might be a really good film. That won't happen, though. There's no way that'll happen. No, okay. That's ridiculous.
Well, let's leave the club and talk about some more good films from this week.
Okay, the London box office. Number 5, Brighton Rock.
Not interested. You interested?
No, I think it's clearly going to go down the way of the dodo and just, you know, good effort, well done, you know, a bit modern. You know, Sam Riley done a lot of publicity.
I wonder what number it is in Brighton. You think it'd be number one, wouldn't you?
You'd have thought, is it the type of film you'll go to Brighton for to watch it?
Well, why not?
Well,
I go to Brighton every day. I haven't watched it, so
it hasn't attracted you to it.
No, number 4 is The Fighter, which we have seen. We talked about last week.
Yeah, review is obviously last week. Hunt it down if you want to hear our verdict on it. I thought it was quite good.
I thought it wasn't that good.
But I didn't think, you know, it's not necessarily...
It's definitely not the film of the year.
No way.
No,
big
okay.
time. Tangled is at number 3.
Disney. Is it number 49 or number 50?
It's right up
there. They're around that mark of making films. And Mandy Moore's there. Zachary Levi, I think, is the male voice lead. Just a retelling of Rapunzel, really. This is getting a bit boring, isn't it? This Disney-fication of everything we've ever known.
I saw Snow White for £7 the other day. Was tempted to buy it and have a Disney kind of...
Well, that's a classic. I'm talking about contemporary-wise. They're a bit...
But then you'd eventually get to these, wouldn't you? That's the problem, is that eventually you get to Atlantis.
In, like,
and you go,
70
oh.
years' time, you're, like, looking back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, oh...
Tangled.
If I watch all my Disney movies, eventually I have to watch Atlantis, and eventually I have to watch Mulan.
Oh, that's a bit... I hope Mulan... isn't that okay? I don't know.
I haven't
seen it.
Number 2.
King's Speech, which, I don't know, we talk about every single
it's
week.
It's incredible. Definitely watch it. That's all I'm going to say, because I've seen it. Joe, what's your verdict? What's your advice to our listeners?
I'm massively bored of it, and I haven't even
seen it.
Number
1.
So I'm massively bored of the hype. Number 1, I'm not. I want to see again. I would see 7 times before I would even see the King's Speech once.
Black Swan.
Yeah, still up there, still great.
It is very good, very good. And you think nowadays it's quite funny, because I think a lot of people think it's their favourite Oscar contender, but it won't win because it's kind of so controversial. Lesbianism, ballet, horror.
It's probably
not an Oscar winner, I think.
It's going to win Best Actress. I think that's the crucial point.
Okay, so new release picks.
We've obviously talked about True Grit, and we briefly mentioned the old Adam Sandler, Just Go With It, Jennifer Aniston rom-com. That was about out this week.
Yeah.
But we can focus on Never Let Me Go, which is based on a Kazuo Ishiguro novel.
Nice.
British-born but Japanese, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely wrote The Remains of the Day, which is a film starring Emma Thompson and Anthony Hopkins. And now here's this one with Keira Knightley, Carey Mulligan, and Andrew Garfield. Quite the triumvirate of rising stars, you would say.
As the trailer says, Oscar nominee Carey Mulligan, Oscar nominee Keira Knightley, Andrew Garfield.
The new Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that's what it should say.
Should say new Spider-Man.
Should have been Oscar nominated for the
now,
Social Network.
I'll tell you what, I'd probably be interested in watching this if it actually has a bit of acclaim to it. I mean, it worries me.
We just said the acclaim.
Yeah, but
Oscar nominated stars.
But Oscar nominated stars, but the point is that not for this film. I mean, the film itself hasn't been nominated, and you kind of think, you know, it could have been.
I think it's a very highly regarded book.
Maybe, but Sarah's read the book. She wasn't that fussed.
Ah, okay.
I don't know.
Let's not go then.
I don't think I will.
Okay.
Paul is
released on Valentine's Day. Do you think it's a rom-com? It doesn't look like a rom-com. It's a bit weird to be released on Valentine's Day.
I think it's for the lonely guys out there.
Okay.
Who want to have...
Are you one of the lonely guys who's going to see?
No, not indeed.
I'm not that fussed, actually. It's kind of like Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. You know, they did Hot Fuzz, they did Shaun of the Dead, but in the reverse order there. And now they're doing this, but it's not Edgar Wright. It's Greg Mottola, and it's Seth Rogen is the alien Paul.
Yeah.
Voicing it, obviously, because it's computer generated. I don't see anything funny about it, to be honest.
I think the thing is
it's an old shtick.
It's getting some positive press. Empire gave it a good review, and I kind of think to myself that Ricky Gervais, when he had Cemetery Junction, they gave it a good review, and I think sometimes British comedians, when they make it big time, make their big movies, they get a lot of positive press.
Too much credibility given.
And I think if you knew them personally, you'd be like, yeah, no, I want to support you.
They're great guys.
Yeah, but I think, you know...
They do a lot of press for this stuff.
Is it as good as Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz?
Well, I don't think those two are particularly good anyway. I think those two also benefited from a bubble of publicity.
I like them, but I really like them, you see. The question, the thing is, they say that apparently it's a great progression. It's, you know, if you like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, you'll like this one. I've got a feeling it's not as good. I've got a feeling it's just not as witty or charming or fun or, I don't know, I mean, is this the science fiction? Like, Hot Fuzz is like action film pastiches and shit like that. Shaun of the Dead is like zombie films. You know, is this like sci-fi? I don't know.
I don't know. In its defense, it does have a great American comedic cast. It has Jane Lynch in there. You've got Kirsten Wiig. You've got the incredible Jason Bateman, always hilarious.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, there will be funny moments. Will it be enough to sustain it? I doubt it.
Well, we'll see. A word of mouth.
Well, we won't see.
Something like this would get word of mouth if it is that good. And I think we'll see how good that is.
Okay. More reviews of the free previews we saw coming right up.
To finish, we've actually got two really great new releases, which are actually out next week.
Yeah, kind of like their advanced previews, which we saw for free at the Clapham Pitch House. So obviously there were two in the same morning, had to make a decision. Simon, you chose...
Animal Kingdom.
And I chose Inside Job, which is a documentary film about the financial crash, the causes of it, what happened during it, and what has happened since it. Of 2008,
yes.
September 2008, narrated by Matt Damon, and kind of, I mean, almost entirely talking heads with the main players, including some people who are essentially responsible in a certain sense, and so therefore have quite negative interviews, and who don't particularly want to be interviewed, but have at least sacrificed themselves to be interviewed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's also a lot of people, like Alan Greenspan is the biggest example, who have not been interviewed, have refused to be interviewed for it.
Oh, jeez. Now, this is an Oscar-nominated documentary.
Yeah, so Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is one of the Oscar-nominated documentaries. Yeah. This is another one, directed by Charles Ferguson, who directed the incredibly compelling No End in Sight in 2007 about the Iraq War and the failings there, and again got really high-level access to a lot of people, not necessarily people who would be positive about or anything like that. People from both sides of the coin is what he talks to. He doesn't get to talk to everyone, but he does try, and he's a very, you know, he stays quite low back in the background.
Okay, so it's
not like Michael Moore, of course.
Yeah.
We've already spoken of that link.
Well, so in contemporary sense, he's dealing with a very current issue. Now, I mean, what...
It's already almost 3 years old. I mean, we're
only
2.5 years on from the crisis.
Yeah, are we saying that it's out of date, or is it incredibly relevant for right here and now?
It is incredibly relevant. It goes back in time. It talks about the 80s. It talks about that time, you know, the kind of the boom period, and it talks about what's happening now. So it's separated into, I think, five parts. And, you know, very regimented like that. Shows a development, you know, speaks to the same, you know, the same people again and again, so goes back and says, oh, and then this is what happened, and then this is what happened, and then this is what happened, and this is how I behaved. So it's a very traditional, classical documentary in that sense. There's nothing too aggressive in a Michael Moore sense about it.
Now, I read it about it in Empire. It seems to got really good review there. I really, really
Oscar nominated, like you said.
So. I was really interested in it. What did you think of it then?
I was pretty disappointed.
It's, oh God!
It's very, very dry.
Right.
It's not. I mean, Matt Damon is a narrator, and he is. There are times when he. I mean, he's. Almost, he's just very crisp and by the line. He doesn't get too angry or anything like that, so he stays very by the line. It's confusing. There's a lot of financial terminology that you really have to get your head around. I'm not ashamed to admit, I got lost a few times.
Any keywords?
Subprime mortgages.
Subprime mortgages.
Credit default organisations.
Means nothing.
No, and a lot of banks to keep a track of and a lot of people. Mainly old white men. I mean, when Michael Moore, you know, he wrote that book, he was very right. There's a lot of, you know, and there's other people as well. They talked to Christine Lagarde, who is the French finance minister, very interesting person, you know, and they talked to people from Harvard. Larry Summers is very important. And I got a feeling he was played in The Social Network, you know, as president of Harvard. He had a part in that, but he comes across very badly here, although he's not interviewed. Alan Greenspan, who was chairman of the Federal Reserve, I think, for many, many moons. The point here, and like I said, I didn't particularly get into it. I got lost at times. The point is, it's a very, very important film because it highlights the problems that Reagan caused. It doesn't put it punches. Clinton was a problem. Bush was obviously an absolutely humongous problem. And even, you know, in the last 2 years, Obama is a problem. And the people that they hire are completely ridiculous. I mean, obviously, it finds some dark humour in the sense that these names keep coming up, administration after administration. These people are allowed back into positions of power. And it's deeply offensive if you come from anywhere on the left, you know. The deregulation of the banking industry is one of the most horrible things to have to hear about, to read about, or anything like that. So for me, it's very frustrating. The film is interesting, but not fantastic or compelling. But the issues it raises are incredible because it's such... It was a crime, and people should have gone to prison. And the people that should have gone to prison paid themselves instead $500 million and are still working in the industry.
An easier solution. If someone came to me and said, go to prison or $500 million, I'd be like, give me $500
million. Yeah, and that's what they've done. And so to highlight that issue is incredibly interesting. It's a film that needs to be seen. It could have been re-edited. It could have been, you know, there's some great characters. There's a bit in the middle where they talk about, you know, what the bankers were like. And of course, they were all douches. You know, they used prostitutes. They snorted cocaine. They were phenomenally arrogant. And the point is that wasn't something new. They've been doing that for years. And they're still doing it now. They're still very arrogant now. And it's a real problem. You know, when you talk about the figures involved, it's very difficult to get your head around, you know, what $1 trillion looks like.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's very difficult to get on board with. It's, you know, from whatever political party you're from, Democrat or Republican, you know, you get it in the neck. None of your parties have done anything about it. Clinton, you know, the people he appointed were no better than the people Bush appointed. And there's no real... I mean, I guess the problem is there's no real solution offered. You know, this is awful. We need to change stuff. And that's the message. And, you know, it is a very important message, but it's not delivered in the most compelling of ways. For my taste, I, you know...
Well, I mean, one thing I thought was there... I read that it was about they tackle Iceland first and make a parallel with Iceland. And is there a disconnect in
so
showing that?
They tackle Iceland first. It's just kind of boring. Like I say, that, you know, that sometimes they get very technical and sometimes they just skirt over things like they expect you to know it, and that's kind of a problem. So you know, it just never really compelled me.
So important, but not as compelling as you wish it was.
Not as engaging, I think. Yeah. Kind of, but you know, but really gets to the heart of something. And there's certainly something very depressing You know, you come out feeling very depressed if you're anti-bankers, as I am.
Yeah, no, me too. I'd love to watch it.
But something you are pro, Simon, is gangsters. You love those guys.
I love the gangsters.
And that's why you chose Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, no, I heard a lot about this. Film Spotting done a great coverage of this when they reviewed Animal Kingdom, and they covered it in a huge way, exploring lots and lots of details regarding how good Animal Kingdom is. I mean, what it's about is about a boy called Josh, who in the opening credit, he's just sitting very gormlessly at a desk where he sees, where next to him, his mum is dying over from a heroin overdose.
Yikes.
And following that, well, she dies. And because of this, he then moves in with his grandma, played by Jackie Weaver, and his uncles, Baz, Daz, Pope, and Craig. And basically, these guys are, they are the mafia, or they're part of, effectively, a criminal organisation within Australia. I mean, they're bank robbers. And it goes from there, and the police are on their case, and the story goes from there. Now, what is incredible about this is some of the performances are so fearsome. There's something very...
Fear. That's what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
Fearsome gangsters.
And it's interesting to talk about, to think about True Grit, which we discussed earlier, whereby we're talking about Tom Chaney and Josh Brolin's character and how he didn't seem very fearsome. Whereas in this character, literally every single uncle, bar Darren or Daz, you know what I mean, Baz, Pope and Craig, they're completely unhinged. Baz is a bit better, but the point is that they're all, you just know that they've got sort of these deep-rooted issues, which you know ultimately...
Psychopaths.
And it comes down to the grandma. Pope specifically is played by Ben Mendelsohn, and he's just, I mean, it's just so scary to see him, because he's just, the first time you meet him, he's in hiding, and then he comes back, and he's almost, he's jittering around the place. One point, when Josh kind of leaves a room, he tries to kind of tap him on the back and kind of misses, in a really kind of awkward kind of, you know, he's trying to do the right thing. He keeps going on about these things, keeps saying, you know, if you need someone to talk to, you know, I'm always here. And he's saying this, he says it to Darren at one point, he says it to Josh at one point. And it's just so scary to see this character walk around, because you just don't know what he's going to do. He's a loose cannon. I mean, I'm being very careful to have explain that setup, but... it's worth noting that the story just goes in some crazy directions. Things happen which you don't even think are going to happen. It kind of annoys me a little bit, because the trailer kind of sets up this whole thing when it goes, you know, there is a threat from within, pointing at Joshua and all that kind of stuff. And yes, that is something which happens. But the point is that that's actually something towards really the final act. Mm. I mean, half the film you don't know whether he's going to kind of stay friends or not, if he's actually going to join them. You can't. And I think potentially a weakness is that Josh, in the film, he's actually very, you know, he's played by James Fresherville,
yeah,
I think
not?
It is, and he's just plays the character very kind of dumbstruck. A bit. He just seemed a bit like. He doesn't know what to do.
But that's made up for by the rest of the charismatic cast.
Of course,
it is. Compelling.
Yeah, and this is what's another... It's a funny thing, because you kind of think to yourself, you kind of think, okay, I get it. You're a teenager, you're young, you're under 18. You don't really know what's going on or what you've gone into. You're just kind of going with it because you just think you're doing the right thing. You're trying to... And so you see a lot of points where he's just sitting there staring into space, and you don't know what's going through his mind. And it works because... there's a purpose to that character trait, but I think you kind of want a bit more movement, maybe from him. I mean, the editing's great. I mean, what I love about it is the music as well. That half the time it'll often kind of show a sequence where it just stops completely, and it kind of then shows the situation unfolding. All the sound effects stop, and the music just continues on. It happens a few times. I mean, the music is by Anthony Partos, and he's got some really effective use of that music. But then you also have Air Supply with that "I'm So Lost in Love," which is on the trailer, which is really, really good as well. Luke Doolan is the editor, and he's, like I said, how it kind of cuts together. It's so, you almost feel like you're observing this family life, but it flits between observing them right up front and being really close to them and being really scared of what's going to happen next and how it's going to happen. And then at the same time, you're really like, you kind of feel quite detached when these kind of sequences play out.
Violent sequences.
Yeah, violent sequences in some cases. And, you know, because you don't know where it's going to go, you know, every single person who is not connected to the situations, you're so scared for, and you're so worried. And you're worried about Joshua as well, which I think is the point, again, it's about that criminal life. And can you really get that balance properly? Can you do that And you can't.
And a word about the legal side of it. Guy Pearce, I believe, plays a police officer.
That's right. Guy Pearce is great in this. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter that, you know, I don't think he doesn't get involved in any bad films. I think if you only watch the limited number of films, just see what he's making and watch them. Because at the moment,
Time Machine.
Well, since Hurt Locker, maybe.
Right. Okay. Well, there's only a couple of years.
Yeah, there's a couple of years. But the point is that since
he is very good in L.A. Confidential.
There we go. Maybe since then, no. Time Machine was between L.A. Confidential. Yeah. So. We're going to have to wait until after. Yeah.
Neighbours?
Well, that's a long, long time ago. Yeah. But he's great in this. And, you know, his character, he's only in a small amount, but he's a lot more important a role because he is the person who's talking to Joshua or Jay and trying to turn him and flip him in whatever way. Yeah, I strongly recommend it. This is one of my favourite films so far.
You've seen some bloody films this year.
I've seen lots of them. I prefer to say in comparison to True Grit, which we've discussed. I think it's a much better film. I think it's a much better film than a lot of the Oscar Best Picture nominees.
Well, you've now seen all 10 Oscar Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, I mean, would this be a foreign film?
No, I think it's a film not in the English language for that Oscar. So that's not this. This is Australian. So.
Wasn't there a Canadian film up for Best?
I think that was in French then.
Ah, there you go then. Well, this should
Simple Simon.
I mean, this should be right up there. Yeah, I don't see. I mean, it's got an epic scale, but yeah, a very small family. Jackie Weaver's performance is great, I guess. I don't think she was any worse or better than the guys in it. I mean, all those fellas in this film were just, you know, Ben Mendelsohn as Pope, incredible. Joel Edgerton as Barry, fantastic. Darren or Daz was Luke Ford. He was quite young, but he'd been involved with them for a long time. And Sullivan Stapleton as Craig, you know what I mean? He was on cocaine, so he was just always kind of like, you know, being really kind of like, you know. He's just unhinged. It's great, absolutely great film. Really great insight into that different, maybe, side of the mafia, and not really praising it. It didn't seem like it was in any way being very positive about this life at all. Sometimes it kind of seems like it's celebrating that type of culture. It's not at all, and that's quite good to see. Refreshing, I guess, to see in some cases.
Okay, cracking stuff. A thumbs up from Simon.
Definitely.
And a waving hand from Joe. Not quite sure. In the middle Inside
it's
Job.
It's great. Seriously.
No, I'm talking about Inside Job.
Oh, Inside Job. Okay, yeah. Okay, well, for me, on Inside Job, I'm kind of interested.
Okay.
I'm worried I'd be bored. You said I might be bored.
Maybe. I didn't say you specifically.
Credit
I said generally.
And
generally,
things like that would go straight over my head.
Yeah, they go over your head and take your money out of your wallet.
Indeed.
Okay, that was the week that was, the Simon and Joe Film Show. Plenty of new films being released there, Simon. For example?
True Grit.
Animal Kingdom?
Inside Job.
Wow.
There it is.
All gold. What are we looking forward to this evening, Sunday the 13th of February?
Okay, it's the BAFTAs this tonight. And I think, you know, as usual, that's
Quick,
the...
Cool Best Film, do it now.
King's Speech.
Okay, Cool Best Actor, do it now.
Colin Firth.
Do Best Actress.
Natalie Portman.
Okay.
Apparently she's not even going to be there.
Oh, shit.
No, and apparently, there's like a bunch of people who are nominated who are not even bothering to turn up.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be interesting to watch.
Not worth it.
Are you going to tweet as
Fincher.
You watch?
Fincher's not turning up.
Oh, okay. Well, he knows he's not going to win. He's putting it up into the Oscar, maybe.
Well, they know that the old BAFTAs generally praise the old British film. What do you think? Best outstanding British film. What do you think it'll be?
I don't know. I think it's Monsters nominated.
Yeah.
If so, probably that, but I don't think it deserves it. Interestingly, I remember when Mickey Rourke turned up to get his BAFTA for The Wrestler, but then didn't win the Oscar, and everyone thought he would. And Sean Penn didn't turn up for the BAFTAs, but did obviously win the Oscar. So,
weird.
You know, there's some attendance issues, I think. Maybe if Sean Penn had turned up for the BAFTAs, he would have won. Maybe if Natalie Portman doesn't turn up, she's not going to win.
Do you think Colin Firth would be pissed off if, like, somebody else won Best Actor?
I'm going to go on a limb and say I think Jesse Eisenberg is going to win.
He won't win it! It's his BAFTAs! No!
I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out tonight. Look forward to watching it.
Good times.
I'm so lost without you. I know you were right, believing for so long. I'm all out of love. What am I without you? I can't be too late. I know I'm so.
That was the Simon and Joe Show, available on Facebook, Twitter, and screeninsight.co.uk. See you next week.